welcome to the Revenue Hub podcast. I'm Trevor Grant. Through these podcasts, we aim to discuss topics relevant to professionals within the hotel, travel and leisure sectors, whether you're in a revenue management function, reservations, front office operations, digital marketing, or sales. We hope the topics discussed will be of interest and either answer some questions or maybe prompt some more. So, welcome to another Revenue Hub podcast. Today we are joined by Pontus and Veit from Berner & Becker. Hi guys, welcome aboard.
Hello and welcome.
Hello, good to be back.
Yeah, good to have you back. So today's topic we're going to be covering off is on forecasting. Interesting topic, of course. Everything in revenue management is interesting, but also very topical this time of year. So we're going to look at trying to cover a number of key areas. Why do we do it? How do we do it? What are we forecasting? We're going to be looking a little bit at the demand versus capacity forecast, accuracy versus overachieving. So a number of areas we're going to try and touch on. So we're going to jump straight into this and get started with the most obvious question, forecasting. Why do we do it?
Interesting question. Why do we do that? Huh? Why do we take all that hassle and crunch deep into numbers and... Yeah. Roll up whatever happened in the past and try to come up with something that makes sense for the future. I think taking up this first point, why do we do it? I think it's vital to have a little bit of a definition of what a forecast actually is. And in my opinion, it is a statement of what is likely to happen in the future in terms of your development of the business in itself. And you know, if you're talking about what is likely to happen in the future, you're also thinking about strategy setting. So I think the why question should definitely be answered with, obviously, we want to know what is going to be our strategy moving forward. And this is based on that specific forecast that we're doing. So without having that view on what is going to happen in the future, depending on some different factors that we're, I think, going to be picking up, on a little bit later, but without knowing that, like, we would be steering the boat pretty blindly through the water, right? And this is what we definitely want to avoid. So yeah, strategy setting is the most obvious reason why we're doing a forecast.
Yeah, and so that makes sense.
And that goes both for, I mean, super important to do forecast, everyone, and that does revenue management On a good level, should do some sort of form of forecasting. But the strategy setting, I think, is goes both for the daily price and yielding, and also, like Veit said, to know the strategies and to incorporate your sales department and marketing efforts and everything to sort of structure that in a sensible way.
So, this may be the wrong question, but is it a chicken and egg, i.e. do you sit there and think, right, okay, we know where our hotel is at the moment, we're looking at developing this strategy, so we forecast for that strategy? Or would you maybe put together a forecast based on what you think things are as they currently stand looking into next year, and then that asks you or poses the questions that maybe means you need to adjust your strategy? Does it matter which way you come at it, or is it just this continual loop that you can end yourself in?
I think you just mentioned the two different approaches that people are taking when they do a forecast, right? And I think the approach of doing a forecast being targeted on what I wish to be happening is one. And the other one is, obviously, you're doing a forecast, building up a future scenario, which is coming very close to what is going to happen realistically at the end of the day and what is possible. And like, there's a huge difference between of them. And I think, obviously, going with whatever you've learned out of trends and, you know, what's going on at the moment and how that would basically relate to whatever's happening in the future in order to build kind of a realistic scenario with your forecast on the development of your business, this is rather to get the way to go with. Yeah. And Pontus.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. Like, it's actually the other way is actually completely wrong. You have to base it on an unbiased methodology where you basically let the data guide you with statistics on how things are going to come. Yeah. And out of that, you base your strategies. But I think a lot of people still in practice maybe do the other way around. And surely it, every forecast has an element of that way as well, because you sort of when you forecast and you see that, for example, you need to you have a very much demand, more than what you can sell, and maybe then you say, okay, let's do some restrictions, let's do some pricing increases, and then you can obviously adjust the forecast down then, because you have started to filter out business. That obviously is a mix of both, if you know what I mean. But the base must be based on data and
on what you know,
statistical analysis, etc., and the trends. So for sure. And coming back to the why, there's then two other points I would say that I usually lift up when we train groups and classes in revenue management. So strategy setting is the number one that Veit said, but also we have the reporting function of a forecast. And that is both on, I would call it, micro and macro levels. So that firstly, you want to obviously just see what sort of revenues and occupancy and everything can you expect in the hotel. And obviously in the bigger companies and bigger chains, they consolidate that on a city or regional or country and business unit level, and evidently the whole company. And so that would be then more on a macro level where companies like Hilton Marriott or any other bigger company, they obviously share those sort of outlooks in their shareholder meetings, and it's essentially a big part of what's driving the stock price of that company. And we have seen, like, I think, a lot of like funny examples during our careers of like someone does it for you, do a forecast and it's consolidated, and then someone says high up, add 5% on top in the month of September and October.
We've seen so many examples. Like, you know, you're doing a forecast to the best of your knowledge, and you think, okay, this is something that you can present basically confidently and that you can share with obviously the people who need to know about it. And you can also take it as a base of your daily pricing and yielding, like if we're talking about a rooms forecast at the moment. But then someone comes around and just tells you, okay, please up your forecast by 5% because it just looks nicer and we need it. Because somewhere else, people have lost money and they can't reflect it in their forecast. So they're just thinking, okay, then you're the hotel who has to reflect it. And it just doesn't make sense at the end of the day, because it's a lie to yourself.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like, but I think that's also it's a political thing, and it is important for these stock prices. So, I mean, the single revenue manager that has his or her like 3-4 tests, that, you know, they feel they have done and put a lot of energy into writing something good, or you have had a system that helps you, and you've looked over it, and you know you have a very accurate, good forecast, statistic-wise, and then someone tells you to sort of just screw that, put 5% on top, and you're like, okay, which segment do I put that, or where is it? So you lose that realistic part of it, and it's very important then to keep your strategy based on what you actually think is realistic, but nevertheless, if the company wouldn't do that 5% on top, and they would, let's say, lowball a forecast and then show that in a shareholder meeting, and that sort of plumps the stock price of that company, that's obviously also super important. So you need to understand that point of view as well, and you need a balance of both. And
yeah, there is a fine balance. Yeah. And I think also, I mean, we will touch a little bit later around accuracy versus overachieving, because irrespective of whether you're looking at stock price and the impact that could have, there is also a different philosophies of the way that people will approach a forecast, whether you want it accurate and then you want to beat it, or whether you want to give yourself a stretch and work towards it. But we'll pick up on that thought process a little bit later.
Yeah.
So you were just talking there about the reporting on a micro and macro, and then you said there was a third element in the why do we do the forecasting piece?
Yeah, so that I would call the synergies to other departments, which is an area that's probably the least used of the whys, if you look at the industry level, also in bigger chains, but that's basically because using the forecast also for other departments, in the sense that you have an occupancy forecast per segment, and then you can actually use that, you know, to do purchasing planning for your F&B stock. You can do it to do your staffing planning, both in the reception and in your breakfast. Yeah, exactly. And housekeeping, and also purchasing with your housekeeping stock. So that would be becoming basically a way of not only looking at revenues in the future, but essentially looking at cost management into the future, and proactively managing that, so that you make sure to keep your profit margins at the end of the day. Yeah. Because there will always be fluctuations and seasonalities and in demand that makes you have different occupancies and amount of people in the hotel. And if you manage that proactively with your cost and staff and purchasing, then you have a good thing going. But I think very few people actually do that.
And I guess this is, we've spoken about it a number of times. It's spoken about a lot. I mean, whether it sits under total revenue management or how that might feel to different people, what that phrase means. But the revenue sits so much more at the if it's done correctly, or if it's viewed accurately. Mm-hmm. You're going to be biased as revenue management professionals, but it should be central to the strategy for the hotel, and then it feeds into other departments. So having developed your forecast, you then are using it to set your strategy for the future, which will have an impact on the sales department, yeah, on the marketing department. Yeah. If you're synergizing with other departments with regards to, as you say, it may be housekeeping, it may be F&B, and you're looking at how that could influence the costing. So you're also bringing in the finance department. Yeah. I mean, it's this forecast really, you could argue, should sit central to the core, and yeah, everything else and filters up a bit. Is that what I'm, have I understood that correctly?
Yeah, it is. I mean, in that sense, it is a statistically accurate glass ball that sort of gives you the future. So you should use it for everything you can. Yeah, obviously the closer you get in time, the more accurate a forecast usually tends to be. There is sort of a common industry standard that you want to have a 3% forecast accuracy at least, like within for the next coming month. Mm-hmm. And okay, if you keep within that level, then for sure you can use that for pretty good things. So
yeah, I mean, effectively, you know, having your forecast accurate is basically the base work for anything that is linked to your forecast in, yeah, different departments, and if it is obviously used correctly at the end of the day. Yeah. But it is your Bible, it is your, yeah, base work for anything to happen.
But right? I guess what hotels sort of tends to do now is that don't use it for other areas. They usually, yeah, go with just the statistical historical data and then try to learn from that and then apply.
Yeah.
That also is obviously a way you have to do it, which we also do also with the room revenues and occupancy. Check how was the last month ending, etc., and what can you learn from it. But
yeah,
still a different thing to sort of proactively work in the future.
And I guess it comes back to something you said at the beginning, Veit, which is about sailing your ship.
Yeah.
You know, it depends where you want to sail your ship to. It is the route that you navigate, and I assume the more that you bring into it, the more time you take in setting that route and looking where you're going to go and what are the various points along the way that you will check will lead to the greater or lesser success of that.
And also, where do you face the biggest waves coming for you and trying to rip your ship apart, right? Just speaking in a picture. But yeah.
No, it makes sense. I always I try not to quote on these podcasts, but I always like reading Sun Tzu's article, and I probably paraphrase him incorrectly, but he says, you know, when in war, prepare for peace, and when in peace, prepare for war. And to me, the forecasting is a time when you're kind of quiet and you put that time aside to map out what the year, yeah, would look for, because you know somewhere along, yeah, that year, you're going to be in some battles with competition or whatever may be. And so having something that you can come back to that you defined when you were calm and peaceful is sets that roadmap. Okay, so great. So I'm there in a hotel. I've listened. I thought, yeah, I need to do with my forecast. So really what I do is I pull out my old one. I think, yeah, I want 10% more on top of that because that'll be pretty good. I straight line 10% across it and away we go. Forecast done, 20 minutes. Glad I listened to that forecast. Rocking and rolling. Is that right?
Hey, essentially, yeah. Rock and roll.
That's all I need to remember.
Yeah.
So that's what we probably shouldn't be doing, but probably is done. So how should we actually do a forecast?
I think there's a couple of vital steps, obviously, that have to be done before you even start thinking about your forecast or doing your forecast. I think it mm-hmm. all starts with, you know, doing some proper research. Depending on the frequency you're doing your forecast, obviously, but you know, if you're starting with collecting a little bit of data that, first of all, is related to your own hotel, so be it historical performance, be it pace performance, same time last year results, be it pricing information on your own hotel in different segments, obviously, because you essentially, you know, okay, where am I currently priced at from a bar perspective? Where's my discount segment, for example, going at with the different discounts I apply? You know, where do my corporate contracts sit in terms of contracting status? And also having a view on your group's business, obviously, which is extremely vital mm-hmm. in order to come up with a strong forecast. I think having that data ready and presented or having it ready in a way that you can easily access it and also work further with it also delivers a very good base for you doing an accurate forecast at the end of the day. And I think it's also important to have a look not only at your own hotel when you're doing a forecast, but also have a look at your competition. Because effectively, you also want to be seeing, okay, you know, my price positioning for some certain days, some certain periods might be one thing, but it would affect your forecast if you suddenly realize that because of the positioning of your competitors, you would not be able to hold your price positioning and you have to act on that basically. And how would that then impact whatever you can be achieving for future dates? So in that sense, there's that internal element and there's also that external element that goes into the preparation. Yeah. And I think, I mean, you can lose yourself into details, but if I am doing a forecast and this is speaking out of my experience, like what I seriously want to know is obviously what's the lead time of my segments? Because this is extremely important. This is the key to anything in forecasting. What's the lead time of my different business segments that I'm looking at and doing a forecast for? And obviously, how are those different segments priced at, right? And if I know that, I can already make a good start on forecasting. Mm.
Makes there sense. Is just to mention some parts to the statistics of it. Like there's this fairly simple, let's say, base formulas that says that okay, your forecast is basically what you have on the books now plus what you got in pick last year between the same point in time from today until the period comes that what you're forecasting. But obviously, the on-the-book situation can also be different now than it was last year, and that's a deviation you have to consider. Yeah. But in a way, it's also much more complicated than this. But you, in essence, you use statistics to predict the future. That is the essence of forecasting. So the more statistical data you have, the better it is. And then there's also an essence in saying, okay, how much do you look at past data to predict the future versus how much do you actually look on the current on the books trends to predict the rest? And let's say the simplified answer is the closer you are to arrival date, the more weight and the more effort you look on the actual on the books trends rather than the last year or the past data. Makes sense. Then it's also what's very important is to realized when you look at the data, both for on the books, but also on the past years, is to find the comparability. And this is obviously a key in statistics in general. So
yeah.
What is comparable? And, you know, a month of September now coming up can behave very differently from September last year due to different type of events, different type of demand factors that are happening. And so you need to sort of exclude periods from the data. You need to include other periods that maybe not are necessarily in September, but they are maybe in October last year, or they are were now in the last week of August. And from that, we can see what's going to happen in the first week of September as well. And so there's this whole factor of like, what data do you compare and look at for the statistical accuracy, and you look at history versus and on the books. And then that's I guess not, I think, more in detail than that.
You also mentioned something very nice, obviously looking at anything that is going on in your market in itself, or anything that's going on in-house in terms of special events or any fairs taking place, any concerts taking place, that most likely could affect your demand, actually, obviously, for forecasting purpose. And knowing about those shifts in demand, in the sense of knowing where your special events shifts are from 1 week to another, year on year, or 1 month to another month, year on year. This is also something to certainly consider.
And, yeah, I just want to build on that further one step, because it's one of the things that make, let's say, forecasting difficult is to read all of these demand influencers. So you have you have past data, you have, you know, you need to look at your group statistics and so on, and to have, you know, good data in the systems to make sense out of it. But then to read those demand influencing factors, and as they can be very different from year to year, there's something sort of outside of the statistical data, what statistical data can show you. And that's then, I would say, a very, so far at least, quite a human factor in how you can notice these and know the impact of that. Because if it's a new fair or a new company opened up a new head office, or the city got a new flight route coming in from the Middle East or Asia, so you're gonna you know, have a lot more tourism. All these things are things that was not there before. So a statistical data can never show it to you. And I think that's also why when you talk about revenue management systems to forecast it, you need as a revenue manager to actively put those things in to sort of help and facilitate the system to make a good outcome. In the future, they might you know, do that somehow.
And now we're jumping into the technology.
Yeah, demanding.
But at the end of the day, we'll just touch on it. We'll look at it a little bit later, but we'll touch on it. I mean, the technology is only as good as the information that you put into it at the end of the day, isn't it? So there is an element. I mean, I just want to pick up on one of your point you mentioned there, Vite, about looking externally. I mean, if you were looking back to last September as you're sitting there doing a forecast, I mean, depending on where you are based, you could have had new hotels could have opened. During that period, the impact. I mean, I was reading an article yesterday about the impact on RevPAR in New York, and although there have been some downturns because of the trade war between the US and China around some of the Chinese people traveling, but what seemed to be one of the biggest impacts was the likes of Airbnb. So again, depending on how that has been playing out over that 12-month period, whether there's been an increase, it's about understanding what's. I know it seems obvious, but surely the point of forecasting is about understanding what's going on in your market, and looking at your comp set is certainly important. But you also have to review: has anyone else come into this comp set? Is there anything new that is influencing that evaluation that I'm making? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think one other factor, obviously, to take in when you're doing forecasting is also having a look at your market share performance, right? Because that doesn't necessarily mean that, obviously, you have to compare absolutely like-for-like periods, but also you're starting to read out a trend now. If you're saying, for example, Airbnb should have an impact on, you know, the performance in my entire market, right?
Yeah.
Then you got to be figuring out, okay, how is that trending upwards? And not only on the specific example of September last year in that month where it all started, but then obviously follow it along on your market share performance over the next couple of months and see, okay, has there really been an impact? Has that impact only been on me? Or has that impact also been obviously on my defined comp set in that sense? And out of that, you will be easily getting a glimpse of if you're still doing okay or if you have to be changing something.
Maybe you have undersold yourself in a certain month historically, so you have a bad market share. And of course, then your previous year's pricing and results and statistics will point one way. But then you say, okay, hey, I need to do a lot more here, actually. So let's go with a completely different strategy than before. Yep. And then that's basically a good example also when your strategy setting and your wish actually changes the forecast.
Understood. Yeah. Yeah, because you could just have had a bad month. It doesn't mean that you want to repeat the bad month and just be a little bit better. Like, we should actually have had a better month. So what do we need to do?
Yeah.
No, that makes sense. Yeah. And so in terms of the preparation, you know, you spoke about putting together the relevant reports, the relevant data, the market. What are there other elements to the preparation that are important, or is that you know, have we kind of covered everything that's key in terms of getting ready for how we're going to put this together?
I think most parts are, but yeah, if I think back on our revenue training, we sort of say, okay, on the books data, look at wash factors and cancellation factors of what you have on the books. Look at your pipeline in terms of groups, and also understand what new group requests will be able to come in the future. And then it's all about those demand factors to sort of be able to foresee the still to come bookings and demand. And that's then a mix of looking at statistical data and on the books trends and other type of factors and reports and so on that can influence this demand. But yeah, I think those are the main areas. And one point to maybe make, like, which is essential for everything, but there's a saying, you know, bad data in is bad data out. So if you know, at your reservations or group reservations, you know, things are not put in accordingly and you can't see historically how many group requests you usually get for a period, then you can't also base the forecast on such vital part of statistics. So it starts at the base, and good data is really a base for everything. And that is something that hotels need to realize, coming back to technology later, but that's a part to have fixed before you start with forecasting, whether you do it in a manual approach or a system.
Understood. And we spoke when we were looking at the why around synergies to other departments about how it can drive sales and marketing strategies, how it can influence purchasing. I mean, if we're how it would seem obvious, I would guess all hotels will be forecasting on their rooms. How broad should we be forecasting? I mean, what about groups? We've spoken about events coming in, but you know, how about into the F&B? How far are we spreading this forecasting ideally?
When, like, sticking to the rooms part, if we look at, let's say, what detail level you should forecast on to make the good decision. So we say it's enough to forecast on your main segments, but that also means a sensible segmentation setup so that you can understand your business. But it's usually sort of a bar segment, it's a corporate segment, it's a special discount segment, groups, maybe with or without meeting, wholesalers, contracts and so on, leisure groups, any other type of needs. But these main segments is sort of the detailed level you need to do it, and on daily data, right? So not like just a monthly number. That could be good for the reporting purpose, like the reporting why of the forecast. But if you look at the strategy part, which is the most important, and, and the synergies to other departments, there you go, daily data by segment is what's needed.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, maybe to answer your question, and that's something where I think you rather wanted to get to, but in terms of how broad we should be forecasting, obviously there's an element depending on the type of your hotel as well. If you're looking into M&E business, meetings and events, or necessarily, you know, when it comes to some certain outlets you're having placed in your hotel, you also want to be looking into that outlet forecasting, basically, let's say broadly speaking, in terms of F&B forecasting. And I think that rooms forecast that you've done in the very beginning, and that is the base for, you know, building up those synergies with other departments, that is, I think, the base work to do before you go into, for example, your M&E forecasting, into your F&B forecasting, because you can build up some certain ratios that could basically link over to building up those forecasts in those different areas. Also, essentially, what is part of your preparation then would be, you know, to check on your meeting room occupancy effectively, looking at your daily delegate rates at the end of the day. Do you have some kind of seasonality in your daily delegate rates, which would be building up then, or which would make it easy to build up kind of a forecast in your M&E segment? Like how many groups requests are you still expecting to come in? Which kind of value is behind there? And so basically following an approach that you've also taken on the rooms forecast, figuring out what you have on the books, and then try and come up with what you think out of historical data and out of trends, plus out of what you know exactly in terms of status in your hotel, what is going to happen as additional pickup, so to say. And effectively, that would also deliver an M&E and an F&B forecast at the end of the day.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense.
So I think
ratios is the key.
Ratios is a key, but it's also, and that is something we briefly picked up on, it's also about the level of detail. Like how much in depth do you actually need to forecast? You know, you can lose yourself absolutely in details on that forecasting part, right? Where it takes up so much time for you that it just, you know, maybe it also becomes not efficient enough.
Yeah, exactly.
What do they call it? Paralysis by analysis.
Yeah. That's how we call it, yeah.
But an easy hands-on approach, example of how you can use a ratio for an F&B forecast, if you have your occupancy forecast per segment per day, and you have your double occupancy factor, and you have breakfast conversion statistics per segment. With those two ratios, you can very easily then get your breakfast revenue forecast, right?
So yeah,
it's just a one-time thing, or not a one-time, but sort of a one-time thing where you need to get your conversion per segment. You could read that through historical data quite easily. And then you can apply that for future. So that same thing for hotels where, you know, restaurant is very linked to the hotel occupancy and so on.
And how do hotels put these forecasts together? I mean, if you wanted to game scenario some of these, so let's say, for instance, you were using your ratios, you were seeing that maybe 20% of your of the people that stay with you that aren't meetings and events go and have breakfast. But you could see that if you could increase that number to say 30% or 35%, what the impact would be. And how do you, you know, for me, I'd be looking and thinking, okay, where's there an area where I can increase that ratio to 35%? And how does that roll out through my numbers and show me the impact? And if we think that's feasible, how do I work then with sales and marketing to put together some pricing and promotions that enables us to try and achieve that increase in conversion? How does that all, you know, just from that example, how would that be pulled together and displayed?
I would say on a... It's the stuff that you would look at maybe sort of within a budgeting process, which can discuss later what is a budget and what is a forecast. But when you look at a budgeting process, you should have quite clear to you, for example, what is the additional revenue spend per segment in general. And then you see that, okay, if I have a corporate guest, they take, you know, sort of 30% of them only eat breakfast, or 40%. Whether I said take a group where you sort of have 90% breakfasts, you need to do the weigh off, like what, how much more room rate can you get from one segment or another, and the additional spend and everything else. So you're basically looking at a total ADR per segment, right? Mm-hmm. And with that, you also taking in cost of distribution, etc. So you can look at total net of cost distribution ADR, and through that you sort of in a realistic way then sort of build up your segmentation strategy, and that is then what you put as a goal, and then that might look different for different type of periods, different days of week, different months, affairs, etc. And that's when you then use the forecasting on an ongoing basis to sort of make sure you control that segmentation mix to optimize that total net ADR.
Understand. I mean, back to the forecasting piece, because as you're right, it took us off a little bit to the budgeting there. But the frequency, I mean, you're saying about the level of, well, actually, let's just go back to it when we're talking a little bit about the detail. What are the risks? Because I guess there's a fine line between, as you say, not enough detail and too much detail.
Yeah.
But let's assume you're getting, you know, you recognize you need the data, you need the information, you've pulled that together. What's the obvious risks that people have when they're trying to put these forecasts together?
I think when it comes to that level of detail, people just, or hoteliers just have to realize, okay, you know, what is my target basically with that forecasting piece? Am I detailed enough? And am I, you know, looking at my business in a level of detail where I'm saying, okay, I want to be optimizing on a daily basis. Do I have some sort of system for that? Maybe also in the sense of technology. Or do I have someone who's there as a, obviously, revenue manager who could be looking into stuff daily? But broadly speaking, I think when you're looking into, let's say, business months where there's a, let's say, a large complexity there with, you know, event shifts from either 1 month to another or from 1 year to another, and you have some bigger special events coming up where you say, okay, those are absolutely crucial for my performance, not only in the months, but they also have a high contribution to whatever I want to be achieving for the entire year. You know, then it certainly makes sense to go into that detail level of doing a daily forecast, basically daily, broken down by segment. You're trying to build up your segmentation mix with that forecast, and obviously out of that you can start you know, restricting and also steering your business into the direction in terms of achieving that forecast or basically exceeding that forecast at the end of the day. But then when you also think about, you know, an absolutely like for like comparable month where you say, okay, the month of August, for example, in the Munich market, there wasn't any events happening in August last year. There's also no events happening this year. So those months, they are absolutely comparable. And if you look at also the day of week performance across those business weeks in the month of August, pretty much comparable. Why would I need to be doing a forecast on a daily basis?
That could be questioned, yeah.
So that's questionable. And in that sense, I think, not saying that a mix is, you know, out of that level of detail is healthy, but, you know, if you decide for once you want to do daily forecasting or you want to do monthly forecasting, then go with it and stick to it. But just as a, you know, putting in some thoughts, if you have those like-for-like comparable months, it might also be enough if you...
Yeah,
just go into that monthly forecasting.
I mean, like, let's say the most detailed level you could do it at is by day, by rate code.
Right.
Like, that would be the absolute most detailed way you could go about it. But then again, like, you would have hundreds of rate codes, maybe in some big hotels. And I did a revenue training recently for a hotel company where I sort of saw their segmentation and the mapping to subsegments and rate codes, and they even forecast and do budgets on the subsegments, which are like, I think it was over 20 segments.
Wow.
Also over 20 subsegments.
And have fun with that.
Exactly. And that I told them also, like, this is, I'm very questioning if that actually, you know, gives you a sort of a business intelligent insight that you can actually do something with to increase your performance, mm-hmm. or if it's actually just a time consuming sort of exercise. Right. So, but I think in essence, it's sort of like the same, like how you should set up a segmentation. You need to forecast and you need to have a segmentation so that you understand where your business is coming from, that you can price those things differently, and that you can make daily pricing and yielding decisions. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, in a previous podcast, we were discussing segmentation and setup, and we were saying, okay, do you need to have your bar rates divided by distribution channel, what's OTA and what's direct from your website? And the question is, if you want to yield your distribution channels on a daily basis, then yes. But if you don't, why would you need to do that?
Absolutely.
Right. Then it's enough to look at a monthly report and say, okay, now let's try to do things because we don't have the balance between the two as we want, right? So you do actions. But yeah, so it should be at a level that allows you to forecast and yield and do pricing decisions on that daily basis.
That makes sense. And how far forward are we forecasting?
Listen,
this might be very different from hotel to hotel, basically. And it's very much dependent on, the lead time of your, let's say, highest contributing market segment also. Because your planning horizon is not necessarily only bound to your forecast, where you actually do a forecast for. Mm-hmm. But obviously, if you think about having a hotel in a city where you have a lot of fairs going on, and those fairs, they usually have a cycle that, group requests are, for example, coming in 2 years earlier, right? Because that's just their booking window or their request window. Then you wanna be kind of ready and also have something in place for very far out, right? Yep. That doesn't necessarily mean that you have a forecast in place for that, because I think if you're only looking down to that forecasting piece, we usually say between 3 and 6 months. That is something where you should be on a very strong level of detail.
Current months plus 3 or 6, and that depends where a lot of things are happening.
Yeah.
You for sure need to look further out when it comes to fairs and stuff, but then it's a bit separate. But that's more or less the horizon. But it's interesting, like we have a client in Iceland, for example, completely different lead time on like everything in the business than a city in Germany, because Iceland is such a place where if you go there for anyone, whether you come from the US or Europe, it's fairly like a long flight. So it's something you definitely plan a bit more in advance than just like I hop on the train now and go to Berlin for a business meeting.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's also the quite big stopover destination between America and Europe. So you have a lot of people, planning their vacations for a cross-Atlantic vacation. And that happens maybe a lot, like 6 to 9 months in advance. Yeah, so
that makes sense.
They have huge things going on there. So there it's different forecasting horizon needed for sure than a hotel here in Germany or Berlin or,
That makes sense. So, so far we've covered off the why, the how, and the last bit we've been talking about is the what. We've been looking at the segments, the subsegments, the frequency. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else in the what element of the forecasting that we maybe need to touch on, or have we covered everything?
Well, sort of covered it, right? Detail level, frequency, segments, subsegments, etc. So
okay.
I think that should be cool.
Well, I'm just going to touch on the technology, because this is not about revenue technology, but just what part does technology play in helping or hindering? Because there will be some people listening who will have RMS systems. There will be some that don't. Do you need to have an RMS system to do an accurate forecast? Because I guess we were able to do it as best we could before they arrived on the scene. What's your view around technology and the role it can play, positively or maybe even negatively?
Mm-hmm. Let's say like this: a system will provide you with an updated forecast, basically, and trying to predict the future and adjusting decisions that it's making, at least on a daily basis, maybe even 3 times a day. obviously having the advantage of potentially delivering better results at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. However, if you also think then around, you know, your manual forecasting approach, you would not be able to do it on a daily basis,
yeah.
Right? You might be able to do it, and that's depending on the frequency.
How often you really do it,
And what you read out of it, and what you act based upon your build-up forecast. Then, so looking at what technology can do for you, obviously it will do it much more frequent, and in that sense, also becoming stronger and maybe more accurate than you could ever be, and taking in, you know, much more trends than that it can basically read in comparison to a person doing a forecast.
Yeah, yeah.
But the thing is, with technology being out there, I think there still has to be a process in place where you validate whatever the system is forecasting.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a revenue management system in place, I think you should also be thinking about a process on how you do a forecast validation.
Okay.
Because effectively, I mean, if you leave it to the system to basically act upon whatever the system is forecasting and which decisions it is making, you want to be making sure that, first of all, the system has also the information that you as a person have, so you can give it to that. And effectively, if you don't agree with any decisions that a system is making for you, you want to be having a process in place that allows you to basically interfere.
Mm.
And with that forecasting validation process is super important,
yeah,
in my opinion.
I think technology and what AI and everything can do, like, they for sure can, I mean, they should actually be able to do a forecast every second, and they probably will be in just a year or two. So that frequency, like I mentioned, and obviously, like, a computer can be statistically much more accurate in calculating mathematics and with that frequency than a human can be.
Mm-hmm.
So it will, and it does work better than a lot of manual forecasts for a lot of periods. I think where the trick becomes, or the tricky part is, it's like coming back to that comparability in statistics, where you need to feed these systems a lot with telling them what is not comparable time periods and what is, and when is there a fair, and when is that not happening again, and so on. And at the moment, with how the systems are working today, there you need to be quite, let's say, proactive in giving this.
Yep.
And that also means you have the process of the double checking of what comes out. In the future, that would be, I expect, a lot less, and they will become much more accurate. But it's interesting because I've spoken to a lot of, you know, founders, CEOs, and programmers from different systems. And when you speak about the fact of, let's say, group business and such fair and events, it's statistically such volatile data that it's very, very difficult to have any mathematical model ever being projecting that in a good way. But at some point, with AI and stuff, you know, who knows what's going to happen, and we'll for sure see an improvement in it. But at the moment, you need to.
Yeah, I mean, we're not here to sell RMS systems, but it would seem sensible that in the current, where we are currently and where we're going, that if you're trying to do this accurately without some system to support you, you're missing out. The parts that you've mentioned are valid. It's only as good as the data that you put in. You also need to validate, as you say, what is the forecast that is coming out. I always use a very, probably a dreadful analogy. I don't know if it happens over where you guys are in Germany, but we every few months in the summer, we get these crazy stories in the paper where someone's ended up in a river because they've been following their sat nav, and they're driving along, and the computer's telling them to turn right, and so they turn right and end up driving into a river because someone hasn't altered the information on the sat nav to say that the road has changed, and the driver is blindly following the information and not using their own pair of eyes to just say, this doesn't look right, but I'm going to keep driving. Right. And you find lorries go down wrong. So it's always quite comical when everyone that isn't used to using these systems suddenly start driving during their summer holidays and they go down these weird lanes and get stuck. And I always think of that with any system. And it's a bit like that with the RMS. If the information that you're putting in, you're not changing and amending and adjusting it, and if you're not double checking that what it's presenting you is right, you could end up going down a one-way street, end up in a cul-de-sac, or worst case scenario, drive into a river. Yeah. So I think it's where technology can help, but it can be a hindrance too. Okay. When we were talking about this topic, there are a couple of areas you guys really wanted to focus in on as well and just bring up. One being demand versus capacity forecast. Just talk us through that for a little bit if you can.
Yeah, now a demand forecast is essentially a forecast regardless of your capacity constraint, meaning if you have a 100-room hotel and you forecast 120 room, then that's your forecast. And that's important to know because essentially by doing a demand forecast and basically writing it then with an unconstrained demand, you know that, okay, there are 20 rooms too much in this demand than what I actually can take in. Mm. And that is then essential to know because you know how can you filter away that's 20 rooms and how can you get the 100 rooms out of those 120 that can pay you the most or where you make the most profit at the end of the day. So, but to make that decision of what price and yielding restrictions to apply to filter out the business, you first need to know that there actually was 120 rooms in demand. If you have 99 rooms in demand or even exactly 100 with the current price and the current yielding strategies in place, then you should just leave it, right? And make sure you fill up. That would be perfect. But as soon as it goes over, that gives you a hint on what to do. And also when it's not even close to 100 and maybe you have a too high price or old sort of yielding restrictions in place where now maybe a group fell out or something, that's when you know to change it also to push occupancy. And a lot of systems also work like that, that you first then conduct a so-called demand forecast where you see your unconstrained demand, then you apply your price and strategy, and then you sort of rework your forecast to become a capacity forecast, which is then adjusted to be within your capacity level.
Understood. Is it a approach most people would take, or do they tend to do it based on their capacity rather than on demand?
I think most of them, like all the people that I came across, they just did it based on the capacity, right? Rather than thinking about, okay, is there really days where I really do have unconstrained demand? And this is effectively what you should be looking at in the very first place. Because demand also means denied business or also lost business that you have not been able to take, basically, or that you have not been able to convert. Like all of this is also demand for a certain period, which effectively would have an implication on whichever business mix you could be achieving at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So effectively, you would have to have kind of a tracking process in place to also get a view on denials and lost business in that sense, in order to, you know, build up a fairly good manual demand forecast in the very beginning. But you know, just for the purpose of also making it quick and also making it quick and dirty, let's say like this, people usually tend to just go with a capacity forecast straight away.
Yeah. But I guess, as you say, knowing that there may be periods of over-demand is important in terms of them posing that question back into your strategy and thinking how you may tackle that period differently.
Exactly. I mean, if the person directly goes and writes a capacity adjusted number, but then they still know that, okay, there was still demand for more, now let's apply pricing and restrictions, that's also fine. I mean, yeah. But the idea is that you do realize when it goes over and by how much it goes over.
And I think it also plays into a little bit on how accurate you can be at the end of the day, or if you are just sitting there and, you know, all the time be surprised on, oh, my God, my forecast said this because I built up like this. And then I suddenly, you know, either underachieved it or I overachieved it. Mm. And that's simply because I did not take into consideration those some certain factors which could have actually influenced my demand at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So, I think you can seriously be losing out on opportunities, basically, if you, you're not aware of your unconstrained demand days.
Yeah,
that makes sense. And that leads us on, using the word accuracy and using the word overachieving leads us on to actually looking at some philosophies as how we maybe tackle a forecast. Do we go for a forecast which is what we think will be totally accurate, and that is what drives us? Do we sandbag some bits because we might be reporting and then we can look really good later because we're going to overachieve? Do we maybe stretch ourselves with the understanding that we might come in a little bit lower, but shooting for the stars, we end up at the moon? That kind of scenario. What is that? It's probably not the wisest thing to be doing when you're forecasting at this kind of level. But are there different philosophies? Is there a way that you would just sort of recommend, okay, let's just keep it accurate? What's the views?
Yeah, I think on the level that we are working at the moment, also with our clients, to be fair, delivering an accurate forecast at the end of the day is what we should be aiming for.
Yeah.
And I think if you're not part of, a bigger hotel chain, if you're not part of, some sort of business construct, which basically requires you to have a view on those political instances as well, I think you're certainly best consulted with trying to build up an accurate forecast, because effectively this is what delivers a method of, just reaching your opportunities and reaching your results at the end.
And it links back to the biggest why, like to the strategy setting. And if you have, in that sense, your forecast should be as accurate as possible, because that makes you do the best decisions, right?
Yeah.
With your, within your pricing yielding, but also putting your sales and marketing team into work, and so that they spend the time wisely.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. Okay, yeah. Final question. I'm conscious we've been talking for about an hour now. I'm conscious you guys need to crack on. Appreciate your time. Let's just hopefully this isn't too big a question and is relatively straightforward to answer in a few minutes. What is the difference between a budget and a forecast?
That's the $1 million question. Pounds or euros?
Can I call a friend, Trevor?
You used up all your lifelines, so you got to answer this one.
I'm calling Contos Bernard to answer that last question.
Budget versus forecast. It's a good question. In essence, a budget is obviously something you write probably around this time of year for 2020 then in this case. And I would say the start of writing that budget is exactly the same methodology and way that you write a forecast. Because you want to predict the future on as much data and statistics and trends as you possibly can. Then on top of that, you should obviously build in your goal setting part, which cannot be seen in the old statistics, because maybe certain demand influencers are taking place. There is that new corporate head office, or there's a new fair coming, or a fair disappearing, but also other types of goals that you might want to shift business historically from OTAs to your direct website. You might want to go a bit more for groups with MICE business, so you increase your total revenue, total ADR and total revenue. And all of these things are things that you then are active decisions that you need to bake into the budget that you won't be able to see from the statistics. So it's a mix of the two. But then once the budget is set, that's the budget. And in a sense, the budget will be the most inaccurate forecast you will ever write for a certain month, because it's simply the first one, right?
Yeah.
So it's important to then to do the continuous forecasting updates to make sure you reach the budget and that you beat the budget. So overachieving the budget is always something good, and overachieving a forecast is also something good, although you want to strive for accuracy, but overachieving it in the end of the day is that's what you want to do. But yeah, so that's the essential difference. And the budget is, you know, a one-time thing that you write, and that's the goal. And then you do forecasting to check where you're standing against it. But the budget should in no way influence your forecast writing at a later stage. Just to say, you know, if I meet a revenue manager, why did you forecast like this? Yeah, well, because the budget said so. I was like, okay, that's out of the that's not relevant at all, because it's just an old forecast in a way.
Yeah.
But obviously, that goal setting part might still be a way or something you consider in your forecast.
So if I think about it as an analogy, if I was looking to do a journey from the UK, from London across to say Moscow, and mm-hmm. I was to, so I, my budget would be me mapping out my route as best I understand it, stopping at certain cities along the way, and projecting how long I think it will take me to get there, what it's going to cost me to get there, and building in some factors that I consider I may experience. My forecast is then, as I reach each of those kind of milestones, or each day I might check I'm on track and have I spent more and am I in the right direction? And so I'm continually evaluating and adjusting. And that's my forecast that is showing me whether I am on the budget or behind or above or overachieving the budget as I should do. Is that fair?
That's good, because you know, maybe the weather does indeed look better than what you expected, so you can actually take a shorter route, or you can, well, it looks worse, so you need to go to another city, and because the other one is flooded, or so adjustments along the way and making sure you reach your end.
So that's where that's where the budget and the forecast kind of separates. The one is that fix that's your plan for that journey, which would be your yearly plan. But then your forecast is the one where you're constantly adjusting to real life scenarios, new additional information coming in, responding to changes that are going on in a dynamic way.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I would just add when it comes to the detail level, so the frequency, we can then, let's say, confirm that that's different, right? It's once you have a budget and a forecast is maybe updated on a weekly or bi-weekly basis. If it's a manual thing from a system, it might be every day, or even more often. But then the detail level, like we said, a forecast should be done by segment by day, but a budget, we are of the meaning that it's enough that you do it by segment on a monthly basis.
Okay. Yeah.
Because it brings quite little. It's more, we come into that time. How do you say it? Verschwendung.
Waste time
wasting thing when you start plotting out on a daily detail how many rooms you're gonna have in, you know, each segment in December next year, 2020.
Yeah.
It's just not gonna come like that anyway.
So
that's enough if that's on a monthly number per segment in a way. Yeah. But for fares and stuff, you might go in and do, you know, daily RevPAR target settings and stuff like this for important periods. Yeah. But in general, it's enough with.
I would really wish that within hospitality, we're coming into the situation that budgeting becomes redundant, basically, because we're going into the process of doing rolling forecasting. We're finishing off a month and we're doing that same month for the next year, and we can already go into a certain kind of level of detail.
Yeah, and you can set your targets within it directly.
Exactly, because you learn out of that past month straight away, and you can apply whatever you've learned to that same month in the next year. And with that, obviously, you know, you have fresh information in your head, you can instantly apply it, rather than, you know, let's say we're having a month of February just gone. Now we're in the month of August, we're starting our budget season. Mm-hmm. Who the hell remembers what happened in February and why that month turned out like it turned out?
Yeah.
And what I learned out of that month to apply it in my budgeting for the February in the coming year. Right.
Yeah.
No one. No one.
Right. I see what you mean. So at the moment we look back and try and remember. Whereas we actually use the information and project forward what we know.
Yeah.
Then it's as we go to each month, we start to find that budget is now set and the forecast is also set.
Mm. In that sense, like a rolling budget setting, actually. Yeah. But then I would say also when you, because at some point you need to set the budget in stone and say, okay, now no more amendments for target setting. And if that is in September or in October, maybe you then have to go back to like January, February and see, okay, did anything else happen after January, February this year that will impact how January, February comes next year?
Mm-hmm.
So like something happened along the year.
Yeah.
But in general, it's a very good and healthy approach to do that sort of rolling.
Well, you could at least be turning up in October to put your budget together, and maybe 9 months of next year, you've got 75% of it has already been populated by existing knowledge and information. And what you're doing is now just overlaying and cross-checking that and then finishing off the other months.
Yeah, and fine-tuning it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, perfect.
That's a good
idea.
Nice.
Hmm? I think other people already had that idea.
Yeah, there's for sure some companies that do that.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, that's touched on budget and forecasting. So thanks so much. So we've looked at the whole topic of forecasting. We've looked at why. We've looked at the how. We've looked at what. We've looked at how technology can help. We've looked at demand versus capacity. We've looked at accuracy versus overachieving. And we've just finished off talking about the difference between a budget and a forecast. I think in the course of just over an hour, that's a pretty solid solid session that should hopefully give some information and some value to someone somewhere.
It feels like I talked very fast, so there's a lot of information in this. That is a good wrap. I'm going on vacation now.
So I think you've earned it, both of you. So as ever, thank you both guys for giving up the time. Great to have you with us. Always good to hear your insights. Have a good vacation.
Thanks.
And we'll catch up with you when you're back in September, and we'll come up with another topic to talk about.
For absolutely. Sure. Cheers, Trevor, and also cheers to everyone that's listening. We appreciate it. Hope to be able to give you a new podcast very soon in September again.
Take care. Yeah.
Thanks, everyone.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.
So that's the end of today's podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. If you had any questions or future topic suggestions, please feel free to reach out via content@revenue-hub.com. Thank you all for listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe, like, and tell your colleagues and friends. Catch you next time.